Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, darling. Good morning, everyone else. You always come second. Other than Marilyn, she always comes first. Okay. Ooh. I love you, dear. Okay. That didn't come out quite the way I wanted to say it. Okay, but we'll let it go with that. My name is Jeffrey Schwartz. I'm a professor of law at WMU, Cooley Law School, Tampa Bay campus. I'm here together with my compatriot, Brendan Berry, who he himself is a professor of law at WMU, Cooley Law School. And I'm supposed to tell you at this point that everything that we say and every opinion that we give is not necessarily the opinion of the administration of WMU Cooley Law School. It's faculty, either as individuals or at large. And good morning, Brendan.
I don't know why we have to give that disclaimer. We don't really have opinions about anything, do we? I mean,
No, I'm one of the least opinionated people on the face of the earth. I mean, if you ask me what I think, I'm going, I don't know. Okay, third base.
Yeah, right.
Okay, that's kind of the way I operate. Ask anybody that knows me. They'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
that's what I do. oh, boy. I'm just, you know what? If George Santos can lie like that, so can I. Good morning, Hezzy. How you doing?
Good morning, touche. That's a great line. If Santos can do it, so can everybody else, right?
And we're going to talk about that, too. Before we started, Hezzy keeps asking all these questions, and we're going to talk about it today. And he goes, okay,
right.
What about this? Well, we're going to talk about that today. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Not that I have a real aversion to repeating myself, because I never say anything over and over again, because I never repeat myself. But all right. We got a lot to talk about. We're gonna do this thing that we always do at the start of the show, which is what do you really think? And what I really think, and we're gonna spend a little bit of time talking about this. Is the fact that, in my opinion, and it's my opinion, I think there might be somebody else on here who agrees with me, is that the Republican Party's major ethos now is just lie because people will believe it. And there's an old expression that says, if you lie. And if they show you the pictures, lie. And if they show you the video with sound, just keep lying. Because no one believes their eyes or ears. They want to believe someone who supposedly believes as they do. And nothing they do is punishable. Mm-hmm. And that's their ethos. And nothing showed it more. We're going to talk about the guy that really is the poster child for this. This weekend, I don't know if any of you watched it, but I did more than once. I watched it again last night while I was watching a pretty awful football game. And not because I'm sorry who lost. It was just a pretty awful football game, unless you were a Dallas Cowboys fan. Chuck Todd actually exposed and skinned and then put over a fire spit, okay, and baked him for dinner, Ron Johnson, the senator from Wisconsin, the guy who I cannot believe the people of Wisconsin reelected, but then again, they eat a lot of cheese. So I was – so
– there must be something funny
I was
the cheese.
Well, it's just the way it smells normally.
Yeah.
Marilyn has a nephew who cannot stand the smell of cheese. Okay, he comes into a room. He's 10 years old, and he says, "You know, who farted?" I mean, it just hates cheese that much. Okay, so some people just have an aversion to the smell of cheese, as Marilyn explained it to me yesterday when we were talking about this. Sort of like I have an aversion to Brussels sprouts. So, you know, my favorite. I haven't talked about that for a long time. I should bring that up again sometime. But because I know you're all thrilled by it. Ron Johnson is just, he just blatantly lies. There was a time that I thought he was just stupid. He's not stupid. He will say in any one moment with impunity any lie he needs to say. And so here he is. He's being interviewed on Meet the Press this weekend. And he starts going after Hunter Biden. And he's asked, Senator, do you have a crime that you think Hunter Biden committed? It is not a crime to make money off of your last name. That's a pretty succinct question. And Johnson pointed to a report written by, I don't know, Marco Polo USA, which was, by the way, co-founded by Trump White House advisor Garrett Ziegler, that alluded to potential crimes committed by, you know, Hunter Biden. And as he started doing that, Todd interrupted him and said, let me stop you there. This is potential. Potential is innuendo to the truth. I don't target individuals. I target the truth. When Todd pressed him on the fact that he targeted Hunter Biden repeatedly, Johnson simply changed subjects altogether. And he was handed his butt when he was told, look, you can go back on your partisan cable cocoon and talk about media bias all you want. I understand it's part of your identity. That's what Chuck Todd said. Now, we all know what his partisan cable cocoon is, right? Fox News? Mm-hmm. And blasting the media constantly is part of Ron Johnson's identity. It is who he is. I've talked about Ron Johnson before. Ron Johnson wouldn't know the truth if it came up and punched him in the nose, because he'd say, that didn't happen. I ran into a door. And knowing Ron Johnson, he might have run into a door. But there's something pathologically wrong with this guy. And we knew it before, and we thought it was kind of funny, because he was like an outlier. You know, Wisconsin kept putting him back in the Senate. He's like an outlier. And I like the word liar. Not liar telling a lie, but a person who just lays out there. But liar kind of fits him. But he is an outlier. He was an outlier. He's not an outlier anymore. He is the he was the poster boy. He's now gotten old and he's got gray hair, so they need someone younger with cool glasses on. But the fact of the matter is that if there was anybody who set the table for Donald Trump, it was Ron Johnson. If there's anybody who set the table for the person we're going to talk about in a little bit, and everybody else who just makes crap up on a continuous basis because it sounds good to his base or her base, it was Ron Johnson. The original conspiracy theorist, what is it about Wisconsin and Minnesota that they just keep putting these people in office? What is it about them? What is it about the name McCarthy that just rings of liars and manipulators? What is it about Ron Johnson, who I guess sells himself as Mr. Outdoorsman, I guess? What is it about him other than his vehement protection of the Second Amendment that makes the people of Wisconsin want to keep him in office? And now we've got him for another 6 years. It's really discouraging. But everybody wants to be Ron Johnson now. I don't know how you get rid of him. Just keep watching him. He'll come up with something new and outrageous to say. I think the only person that really comes close to him now is Rick Scott. And I'm sorry to say he's from the state that I live in. I did not vote for him, and I'm not going to vote for him in 2 years. See, you're going to lose now, Rick, because I'm not voting for you. Okay. That's what I got to say. That's how I feel about that. And nothing much more to say.
Yeah. There's plenty of that to go around, though, you know. Minnesota,
well,
I'm
not questioning that.
Right.
It's just that he was just ripped a new one by Chuck Todd. I mean,
yeah.
Chuck wasn't having any of it at all. None
it's kind of rare.
No, not for Chuck. For Jake, that's a different story. But for Chuck, no. Chuck is taking Meet the Press seriously. He wants to follow in the footsteps of his predecessors who didn't let people off the hook on lies.
Yeah, well.
So, if this is a new thing for him, I appreciate it. I'll let him
Maybe he turned over a new leaf.
Right. Yeah, and then he found a worm. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So,
what do you got for us?
Okay, so on the subject of what I think this morning, I happened to be watching a certain network yesterday evening and saw Claire McCaskill raise something that I've been thinking about for a while. So
he's only on
again,
one
we're
network,
gonna...
so you're not being very oblique.
Yeah, I know. I was figuring anybody could figure this out, okay? So,
okay. I just want to let you know. Okay.
Yeah. And she raised a point that I had been thinking about. So we're not going to get into substance right this second about the individual we're going to talk about here in a minute. But I can summarize this way. There were a whole lot of lies told by a candidate for office, and every one of them could easily have been researched and debunked. These are not the kind of lies that would require, you know, a private investigator to unearth. You can call up Bradley University in Peoria, Illinois, and ask them, did a Brendan Thomas Beery graduate from this institution? And the answer you'll get is, we can't say anything about his academic record, but yes, he did. Okay? He is a graduate of this institution. All it takes is a phone call. And so the question is, how is it that none of these phone calls were made, none of this fact-checking was, and none of this was exposed by media? Now, I should say, apparently there's a local newspaper that did do some digging around, but nobody was listening to them. They're a very small operation, so it didn't get any traction. And one of the problems is, as Claire McCaskill pointed out, this is why I raise her name, because she made this point, and I had been thinking about it, is what has happened to local, state and local media outlets. They've been nearly wrecked. I wonder if everybody has had the same experience, right? I look at local newspapers, especially if I'm looking for a sports story or something like that. So speaking of Bradley University, where I did go to school, that's in Peoria, Illinois. And Peoria had a newspaper when I was there for a long time. It's still there. It's called the Peoria Journal Star. And they used to have, dozens of reporters, everybody in town read the Peoria Journal Star. They did a great job, really in-depth stuff, well worth the money. And I don't know what's happened to print media, but they've lost, they've laid off tons of their reporters. I mean, the sports section, is down to a couple pages and, maybe two people working on the sports section. It's nothing like it used to be. All you get in local newspaper, and I don't know, maybe Hezzy knows. I mean, you're in the media world. It's called Gannett newspapers or something like this. I mean, these big conglomerates.
Is it Garnett? I think it's Garnett, isn't
Garnett?
It?
Garnett, yeah. Something like that.
They just buy up
these local newspapers, lay everybody off, and you can go to a dozen different local newspapers and see the same wire story in each one, right? They just all – They just take wire stories and print them in their newspapers. And we don't have this culture anymore of real reporters working for real news outlets doing real fact-checking and digging. And when we get to them, I guess we'll rattle off some more of the lies. But, I mean, so I'm using that because it seems like one of the easiest things. I mean, how do you claim to – well, he said he graduated from Baruch College or University, whatever it is. I don't know how you get away with a lie like that. If you have an active local media with legitimate local media outlets, and apparently we just don't have those anymore. So that's what I'm really thinking and thinking about today is where are we going with this? If we have three or four people in this country controlling all the information, and if one of them is Rupert Murdoch, and another one is Mark Zuckerberg, and another one is Elon Musk, right? And where are we going? If these are the people controlling the flow of information in the United States, where are we headed? And if we don't have reliable mainstream media and reliable local reporting, we're in a world of hurt. So that's what I think.
Well, let me just say this.
Yeah,
I'm here. Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
It is Gannett, and Gannett publishes, believe it or not, USA Today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is basically, if you go online and people in the other newspapers have their papers online, they give you, we'll give you the world in 5 minutes. That's USA Today.
Yeah,
it's a 5-minute read. Okay, the whole paper. So I just call it Useless Today. Because it really doesn't tell you anything. But that's Gannett. And their motto is that they exist to make stronger communities. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure. The day, look, there was the day that every city, major or otherwise, had two newspapers.
Right.
And, of course, on almost every issue, the two newspapers would disagree. But the one thing that they operated on was a agreed set of facts, because the facts mm-hmm. are the facts, but their interpretation of the facts, their interpretations of the effect of a policy may differ because there were people who were experts who would use the same facts and spin it a different way, not spin it, but interpret it a different way. And when it came to candidates, for the most part, unless it was a hands-down thing, whoever one picked, the other one picked the other guy. And they would say good things and bad things about both candidates, and people could judge for themselves what they believed or did not believe. And that's fine as far as believing or disbelieving a policy or believing or disbelieving an interpretation. An interpretation, not a set of facts, not created facts, but an interpretation of the effect of those facts.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. That's the way it used to be. I used to get up every morning, go out on the front stoop and pick up the Toledo Times. Okay? And that's what my father would read in the morning. And then in the evening on our doorstep would be the Toledo Blade, which, by the way, has a road named after it down in Fort Myers, or Punta Gorda, I think. But the Toledo Blade was the evening newspaper. And you would read their editorials, and you would read what happened during the day, and there would be this continuous flow of information twice a day. Whatever happened during the day showed up to the Blade, and whatever happened from late in the afternoon until the morning would show up in the Times. That's the way it worked. And every city had this. They had more than one newspaper. They had more than one source of information so that they knew what the real facts were, because those facts would show up in both newspapers. And people trusted their newspapers. And they trusted Walter Cronkite. And they trusted Huntley and Brinkley. They trusted Harry Reasoner. This is what they did. Today, your source of information is Mark Zuckerberg. when he decides to put the truth out. Your source of information is a guy we're going to talk about today, okay, who basically owns the print media in New York, and he owns Fox News. Rupert Murdoch, starting at a very young age, started taking over the newspapers in Great Britain and decided the United States was ripe for him to take over. And he's made himself a gazillionaire. And he runs Fox News, and he does it for profit, and he doesn't care about what he sells to people. We're going to talk about that. So I don't know how we can get the news to people any better than we do if they won't watch at least legitimate and honest, straightforward, and even the honest and straightforward networks have their own slant. I don't care if Fox wants to put the news on and put it in a conservative way. They have the right to do that. That's a position to take on the facts. But they got rid of all those people. Now all they care about is giving news that feeds into Hannity and feeds into Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham. That's all they care about. And all they care about is the money they make off of their primetime with people who are not journalists. They're just blowhards. I mean, do you realize how safe this world would be if they stopped breathing? There'd be so much more air for the rest of us to breathe. We should start limiting the amount of oxygen that they're allowed to use. I got a feeling you walk into a room with Hannity, and he sucks all the oxygen out of the room, literally. Remember how some people say he sucked all the oxygen out? Well, you know, because, you know, everybody took a deep breath in. No, he just starts breathing, and nobody else has any oxygen. I don't know how we stop this. I literally don't know how we stop this. Because we're certainly not educating people. You see, there I go with the education thing again. Okay, we're not educating people to throw people like that into the river and let it float downstream with all the other excrement. I don't know how we do that. But maybe we'll figure something out. Okay. She was great. That was fun. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about our favorite volleyball player.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to talk about our favorite volleyball player. Okay, this is a guy that gives a bad name to volleyball. Okay, and I bet you everybody's going to stop watching it now. This is a guy who, and this is all joking, by the way, there was a meme about him that said, I taught Jeff Beck everything he knew about playing the guitar. There's a new scandal. Santos is acknowledged possessing documents from his time as Pope. Okay. Trust me, he said. I only lied about everything else.
Mm-hmm.
He said he admits he may have embellished his resume a tiny bit. He says, my apologies. It was a stressful time. The Titanic was sinking, and I had just invented the Roomba.
And one time
he apparently claimed to be a surgeon. Orthopedic, wow. Cardiovascular, maybe, something else, trauma. It's all kind of the same, isn't it? Okay. I mean, there is nothing about this guy's life that is truthful. I'm not even sure he was really born. If he tells me the date he was born, okay, my attitude is he's not lying about the date. He's lying about being born.
Yeah.
Because no one can create as pathological a liar and as bad a liar I mean, he's not even a good liar, okay? As bad a liar as this, he had to have been created in a Petri dish, okay? You said earlier that people didn't check this out. That's not true. The press didn't. Well, one newspaper out on Long Island did.
Yeah,
but
right. That's what I said.
That's not true. Yeah, just one. But there were other people who checked it out. He literally, this shows you the chutzpah, and I don't have to translate it anymore. This explains, to me, this beats the definition that's in the American Yiddish Dictionary. Okay, chutzpah is that quality of a man who can, after murdering his mother and father, can stand before the court and ask for mercy because he is an orphan. Okay? This guy has the unbelievable chutzpah to tell his staff, yeah, sure, go check me out. So they did opposite. They hired somebody to do opposition research. The opposition research people came back and told his staff, you got to tell this guy to withdraw because there isn't one true thing about his life. It's all lies. It's just nothing but lies, starting with being born. And his staff went to him and said, you are going to humiliate yourself. Do you understand that? We want nothing to do with this. If you're going to go out and start bragging about and making stuff up about your resume, we want nothing to do with you because we have reputations. We were sent here to help you get elected. We don't want you to get elected. Okay? So we quit. And he lost his entire campaign staff. If they knew, you're going to tell me they kept the secret? Do you realize that a secret is literally no fun unless you can tell somebody? And I find it hard to believe that this guy who's the head of the Nassau County Republican Committee was not told by these people. He claims he didn't know. We just did a superficial, and he had run 2 years before over in Queens and had moved over here, which he really didn't move over there. I find that hard to believe, that these guys who worked for him kept this secret. I'm sorry. Liar, liar, pants on fire. There are people within the Republican, well-connected Republicans within the party who knew full well this guy was just a walking pile of dog excrement. He had no business literally talking to the press and making stuff up. I mean, he had literally no business doing that. But truthfully, you know, he had no business being out of jail. He should have been in jail in Brazil. And he may still end up being in jail in Brazil. But the truth of the matter is that I do not understand how they let this guy get as far as he got. They knew. And to make it worse, he's aligned himself with the Liar Caucus, which is the biggest caucus in Congress. He's part of the liars, you know. There's a game people play where you tell a lie and you get called out. Okay, liar. You ever play liar's poker? Liar's poker. I think that's the caucus's game. The Liar's Caucus is made up of 221 Republicans. Oh, that's all there are in Congress is 221, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Might be 222. There might be one honest one there. But he's made himself part of the Liars Caucus and the Ultra Liars Caucus. Lauren Boebert, Gates, Gosar, Gohmert. They become part of the, you know, they call themselves, I don't know what caucus they're called. They're the Insurrectionist Caucus, the Liars Caucus. It doesn't matter. And I think his only friend, and I'm not sure she's a friend, is Lauren Boebert. I think she befriended him to try to get him to switch over against McCarthy, and he wasn't stupid. Switch out against McCarthy, and they'd throw his ass out tomorrow. So people ask, what do we do about this guy? Okay, I think he only owns one sweater, by the way. He wears it every day. Okay. Okay. But, and there's nothing that McCarthy's going to do about it. Santos is a problem because there are so few things that we can do to remedy the situation. You can't, quote, kick him out of Congress. They're not going to expel him. Republicans are not going to do that. So what do we do about it? Well, Republicans don't want to talk about him. They don't want to acknowledge him. But what they're not acknowledging is that they've now become the party of liars. When they talk about politicians lying, when I hear that out of right-wing conservative people, you know what? People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. You are the party of liars, and that makes you a liar too. And that's what they are, and he taints them that way. The more they refuse to do anything about it, I don't want to hear how well he said a few things he shouldn't have said, blah, 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 blah. You're more worried about your majority than you are the integrity of the United States government. Just admit it. And don't tell me Democrats lie too. Really? Like this? Like Trump? I don't think so. This is just unforgivable. It really is just unforgivable. So what are they going to do? It'll take them 2 years to do the ethics thing, and by then he'll be up for reelection, and he'll lose in a primary. I don't even know the Republicans will primary. They can sit back and wait for him to get indicted, but then they can't throw him out. They can only throw him out if he gets convicted, and he can stall off a trial for a long time. He finishes his term. McCarthy needs his vote. He won't come out and say it, and he isn't going to condemn him because maybe this guy turns on him. Because McCarthy's scared of his own shadow. He's afraid he's going to turn on himself. So I don't know what we do about him. I don't know what Republicans will do. But the fact of the matter is, he has become, the longer they let him stick around, the more this stuff drip, drip, drips, the more that they refuse to do anything about it and try to change the subject away from him, the more it's going to hurt them in 2024. People in districts are going to say, what did you do about George Santos? Why didn't you condemn George Santos? Why didn't people do something about him? Does that make you a liar too? I think it does. Lauren Boebert won by 523 votes. I promise you I can find 523 people who've decided they don't want to vote for her again. I bet you I can find – I would be willing to put odds on that I can find 5,000 people will not support her again because she's going to get nothing for their district. She bought nothing out of what happened. So, I don't know. Third base. But they got to do something.
You know,
right, friend?
I mean, first of all, I'm shocked and appalled that you would suggest that Kevin McCarthy has no conscience or moral compass or spine. I mean, the man is such a
wait a minute, he's not
a man
of principle. Because he doesn't. He's not a man because he doesn't have any you-know-whats. Okay?
Well, yeah. That's
okay.
Yeah, I mean, if ever there was a more spineless politician, I've never seen. But here's the bigger point. I keep feeling like I have to cite a certain network because, you know, I'm hearing them say last night, you know, everything I was thinking of talking about this morning. So it sounds like I'm stealing from them, but this is something I was going to say anyway. There is no such thing as shame anymore in the Republican Party. It is impossible to shame a Republican.
Ron Johnson was a perfect example this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so many of them. I mean, and Donald Trump, you know, you can grab them in the you know where. You know, I mean, and that doesn't disqualify you from being a candidate, never mind the president. You know, it's just, we ask this every week, where's the bottom? And the fact is that there is no bottom. There is no bottom. Donald Trump was not exaggerating. It was not hyperbolic for him to say that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and it wouldn't matter. His people would still be his people. There is nothing, not a sexual scandal, not an international scandal, not obstruction of justice, not the serial lies about everything about your life, right? There is nothing, nothing that disqualifies you and the Republican Party in their pursuit of power. For whatever reason they want to have it. I'm still trying to figure that out, I guess for its own sake. But this guy, you know, you mentioned the volleyball.
I forgot to mention volleyball. He won a national championship there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. He was the star of the volleyball team.
At Baruch University or college.
Yeah, apparently has a stellar men's volleyball team in whatever division they're playing in. Yeah. And so he was their star and won, you know, national championships.
He walked into Yale and Harvard one year, and they beat the crap out of these guys. That's exactly what he said.
Right, right. And he said it with great aplomb, you know?
Oh,
like,
he did.
I
was the shortest guy on the team, and he's 6'2".
Yeah. Yeah. he lies with such enthusiasm, you know?
Oh, he does. If he took that imagination he has about himself, you know, how can I say? Well, there was the movie The Incredible Mr. Ripley with Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
some people are going around calling him the Incredible Mr. Santos. Mm-hmm. What was the one with the guy with dream stuff? It was a classic book. I can't remember the name of it. They made a movie out of it too. Why can't I remember the name of the book where the guy would dream things that he was just this wonderful, you know, almost superhero kind of guy. And he did everything in the world. I'll think of it in a minute. But there was this classic children's book about a guy who makes up things and dreams them, and therefore they become reality for him. This guy goes to bed at night, and I've known people like this, goes to bed at night. He dreams of all these wonderful things about himself, and the next morning to him they are reality.
Right.
They're things that have really happened in his life. And if he could take what he imagines and put pen to paper, he could write a book. He could create a fabulous book that would probably be a bestseller. It takes that kind of imagination. He could use this talent of his. Once he apologizes to his mother, okay, you know, he could actually do that. But the problem is we're finding there's something very nefarious about this guy. Incredibly nefarious. New details have come out that make people believe that all the money that came his way through a Russian oligarch his name is Victor Vekselberg, and he is in the inner circle of all of these oligarchs, and he has a nephew by the name of Andrew Intrator, who apparently gave, he and his wife each gave $5,800 each, which was the maximum allowable to the main campaign committee, but then gave tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars to PACs that were supporting Santos, as well as providing him with money by claiming that he was somehow attached to financially to Santos's company, used his company to hide the money that he was giving this guy. This, he was basically a purchased representative for a Russian oligarch. That's what they're finding out. So the question comes in as to, and these are some of the campaign violations that they're finding. That's where the money came for him to have a fabulous apartment and to buy new clothes and all that kind of stuff, because the people who gave him the money didn't care how he spent it as long as he got elected. And Trader apparently has given a lot of money to Santos when he ran 2 years ago. The fact of the matter is that this guy has been purchased, and he probably sold a bill of goods to Intrator and his uncle. I personally would not want to get millions, at least $1 million out of an oligarch by lying to him. That's how you end up lying down permanently.
Falling out of a window.
Okay. Yeah, falling out of a window or slipping on a banana peel down in the subway.
Yeah, right, right. It was an accident.
Oh, geez, look at him. Boy, he makes a mess, doesn't he? Okay, I don't know, how you do things like this. So he may be in more trouble than we can put him in. Okay? He literally may be hiding in his office thinking that if the uncle's looking for him, he ain't going to get him while he's in the U.S. Capitol. For all we know, he sleeps in his office. There have been congressmen who do that.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy's just, I'd like to sit and talk to him and take notes. How can you not at least admire the ability to lie this way and the imagination to do it?
Yeah, creativity. Mm-hmm.
It is very creative.
Yeah.
Okay. I would love to see Brazil ask for his extradition right now and have the Justice Department grant their request. He can vote, and then and McCarthy can have him vote from his jail cell down in Brazil. Oh, yeah, that's right. They can't do absentee balloting anymore or proxy balloting anymore, can they? They did away with that. So, I don't know. George, listen to me carefully, okay? There's just something about a person who can take this kind of abuse on an ongoing basis and not feel it. It means you have literally no conscience. No conscience at all. I really think that you're a sociopath, okay? And you need a lot of help. Actually, they can't help you. All they can do is lock your ass up, okay? You are a danger to the community. If you were a stoplight, you'd turn on the green just to watch the accident. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out, but get out anyway. Enough. That's just awful. Can you guys hear that banging in the background?
I did. I heard something.
Okay, good. It's not that loud then. Okay, I'm in my home, and they're working on tile up above, busting out tile.
Oh, that's fun.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it's always a lot of fun, especially in a condo. It could be 10 floors above me, and it just reverberates all the way down. It's fabulous. I, have to tell you, there's construction going on in this building on a constant basis. And what I keep asking, when are you going to be finished? 2 weeks. Okay.
Yeah.
I did want to mention something that wasn't on our agenda that you mentioned, and that's, you know, that's Donald. Did you read about his depo in the E. Carroll rape case?
No.
Where she's suing him for slander, for saying that she was lying about being raped by him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you see the depo? Did you hear about it?
No.
No.
Oh, he said in his depo, seriously, that she enjoyed being raped.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
so he admitted?
He really enjoyed it. He basically admitted. He said it was consensual. Okay, it was like a rape fantasy. I guess he's alluding that it's like a rape fantasy thing.
Oh, my God.
Okay. And that, so he's admitting that they had sex, because I guess she has proof that they had sex, okay? But he's saying it was consensual, and then he said she enjoyed being raped, okay? You know, that was kind of his thing. I mean, I could – really? This guy is the worst client in the whole world. And this was all gratuitous, by the way. It wasn't an answer to any particular question. This guy just can't help himself. He literally can't help himself. He honestly believes that depos are for him to advocate for himself. Okay? Mm-hmm. He thinks that works. Okay? I could not believe this when I heard this last night, when I heard what he actually said. Do you have any idea the size of the judgment that they're going to grant us? This woman, and the other thing he said was, when this is all over with, I'm going to sue her. For what? Mm-hmm. Honest to God, for what? I really don't know. You can't sue her for slander, for claiming you slandered her, because she did it in a document. She did it. She has judicial immunity for what she files in court. I mean, malicious prosecution? I don't think so. So, I mean, they did have sex. So what are you going to do? You admitted to having sex with her. I really don't know. But, you know, he threatens he's going to sue her. And I got to get the transcript. It's worth the dollars to get the entire transcript. It really is. Because you can make a comedy routine out of this. I'm telling you, somebody is going to write a Broadway comedy called Donald Trump, The Truth. Okay? Okay?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that opening on Broadway? Donald Trump, The Truth. Maybe that's what I'm going to do with my retirement. I'm going to write a play and try to get someone to put it on Broadway. Okay? Could you imagine how many tickets that would sell? I would be the billionaire that he's not.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll leave that one off. Okay. Let's see. We cannot get through this day without some discussion of the Biden classified documents problem.
Yeah.
We really can't. And we'll start out with the idea that the strategy being used by the Biden White House is making a drastic turn. They are saying they cannot make any further comments about the investigation because they are cooperating with the federal government. Yeah, now they're drilling. If you can hear that, that's drilling from upstairs.
Yeah.
I do apologize.
Okay.
I'm going to move into the other room. If I move to another room, it won't be so bad. Not really. It's just as bad. Okay, now I'm going to go out in the hallway. See if that's any better. But what they're doing, nope, it's bad all over the building. All right. Pezzy, I feel like I'm you. But sort of switching it to, we can't can't talk about it because we're cooperating, and it would appear if we did that, we'd be interfering with a Justice Department investigation. And so, therefore, all we can say is we can't comment on things. If you want information, you have to go to the Department of Justice, or you have to go to the archives, that type of thing, which, by the way, is how you're supposed to handle it.
That's right.
That's actually the way you're supposed to handle it. They have done everything right, okay, legally talking. We said we were going to divide this up. Legally speaking, they are doing. They have done everything right here. They found some, and they keep looking, and they keep turning it over. And they went directly to the archives, and they've been cooperating with the FBI completely. They have not hidden anything. They're not excusing anything. They're not claiming things were declassified. They're not claiming that the documents belong to Biden. They're saying basically, and what we're going to find out is some staffer, this stuff got stuck in between a couple of piles of papers, and it got thrown into a box, and the boxes probably have never been opened since they were delivered to his home or to that think tank that he ran, the Penn Biden Project. So he's done everything right. Now, is there a mishandling? Yes. If it wasn't purposeful, at best it's a misdemeanor. It's not a felony. He has not obstructed justice. He hasn't had people lie and commit perjury. He hasn't forced anybody to get a search warrant. He's allowed the FBI to come in and look around without a search warrant. And after they found out about everything, he didn't try to conceal what was there when he found it. He's done everything legally correct. And if I'm wrong, you can correct me, Brendan. But he's done everything. He hasn't conspired with anybody. He hasn't claimed that they're his. He hasn't disclosed anything that we're aware of. They've done everything right. Yet they are taking hit after hit after hit, trying to conflate him with Donald. And that's both a legal and a political issue, because legally, this is really kind of tying Jack Smith's hands on whether he can charge Trump with improperly having the documents and concealing them and taking them and all of that. Obstruction of justice, he's got him cold on. So that's the legal side of it. Let's talk about that first real quick.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah. There are some real problems here. Yeah, well, I guess we'll talk about that in a minute, but politically. But I don't have much more to add legally. I mean, I think that you're exactly right. And when the facts come out about each case, which in the case of Trump, a lot of them already are out. But when all the facts are known legally, these are not going to look like the same thing. They're completely distinguishable. The crux of the problem here, maybe I'll lead into the political thing with this, is the thing that I complain about pretty much every time we talk, which is the inability of the public to distinguish and compare and tell the difference between two things that are not alike. And so legally, when you get into the legal realm, and we know this so well, suddenly things like evidence and reason win the day, or at least they should, if the system is working the way it's supposed to. But evidence and reason don't matter in politics. So I teed it up for you. What do you think about the political end of this?
Well, there's a multiplicity of political issues here. One of them affects the legal issues, and I referred to that, and the difficulty now of charging Trump. But one has to remember that Trump has admitted, for all intents and purposes, He knew he had the documents. He knew he wasn't supposed to have them. There are staffers who have said, you can't have that, Mr. President. You can't take that with you. We know that he destroyed documents by ripping them up and trying to send them down the toilet. We know Mark Meadows was destroying documents by burning them. We know that these things took place. These are facts. More than one person has talked about it. So these are facts. In Biden's case, you have none of that. There is politically the issue that Biden did not keep a visitor's log at his home. Well, guess what? I want to see the visitor's log of Mar-a-Lago or Bedminster or Trump's house home in Trump Tower. Did you keep a log of – yeah, you kept a log. Every time a member came in, they had to sign in. That did not take place. So I don't want to hear this. This is the big complaint now from Comer, who is the chairman of the Oversight Committee. Where are the logs? We don't believe them that they didn't keep logs. Really? Mr. Comer, did Donald Trump keep logs in Mar-a-Lago? No, but that's completely different because that's a country club. Oh, well, that makes it better.
Right.
It's a country club that's open to the public as opposed to someone's home
that has
protection from the Secret Service and alarm systems. Oh, okay. That makes it better. There are Republicans are caught in their own hypocrisy because during the time that Trump was being investigated, it was a nothing burger. This is unimportant. All kinds of presidents do this, and they are his documents, and I don't believe that they actually belong to National Archives and blah, 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 even though there's a statute that says that they do. But now all of a sudden, oh, we have to investigate what happens here. Really? Are you going to investigate what Trump did? Oh, no, 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 no. We don't need to do that. Okay. This is the way they operate. So the problem is politically that a guy whose approval rating was starting to really get to the point of getting real close to 50% and probably was going to break it, this is a political handicap. This is a problem. And the only thing that's going to get rid of it is that inflation goes down to about 4%. Everybody's working, okay? Everybody's getting the benefit of the infrastructure bill, and everybody's getting the benefit of the Medicare and Social Security cost of living increases, and the price of groceries go down because that's what's really holding up inflation right now is the price of groceries, which should go down because the cost of transportation are going down. So that's going to be a lagger, but it is going to come down. But the truth of the matter is, that's where they got to get it. They got to get inflation down to below 4. Because the appropriate amount, I guess, is like 2.8% a year. That is where we have to. And now interest rates start going down. All this has to happen over the next 2 years. Republicans are going to have to literally shut down the government because they can't get anything out of Biden, who is absolutely refusing to negotiate with them on the debt ceiling. Only thing I'll sign is a clean debt ceiling bill. I am not going to start chipping away at everything I got out of the last budget. You're not taking away the money I already have. And Republicans are going to shut down the government. Don't even question it, because McCarthy cannot go to Democrats for votes to raise the debt ceiling, because that is the day he will be removed as the Speaker of the House. Because Democrats won't save him there either. The government is going to shut down in June, all in an attempt to renegotiate the budget. It's like they were watching the West Wing. And this is because he will be weakened by this. This is like a Christmas present to Republicans on the Hill. This is the big investigation now. They won't get to Hunter for a while. And now they want to look and see where Biden's money came from or where his son's money came from, and did his son have access to these documents, and did he really steal them so that he could make money off of them? That's the implication that they're laying right now. I'm willing to bet everything I own that that is untrue, that there is no such evidence. But that's what we're going to hear out of Hannity. That's what we're going to hear out of Tucker Carlson. And that's what we're going to hear out of Jim Jordan. And that's the political price. And if I'm a Democrat who has a national name, I'm starting to explore whether this guy's going to run again or not. Mm-hmm. Where it was a foregone conclusion 2 weeks ago, it's not so foregone anymore. He should, because despite today's release of a poll that says DeSantis is up with him by 5, that's only because DeSantis doesn't have anybody really running against Trump except for him, and he hasn't even declared. But when the field grows, that number for DeSantis is going to go down. But if Democrats start thinking about running and Biden pulls out at this stage, it's going to be a problem, because I don't think they have anybody on the bench who has enough of a head start to be able to take that nomination and move forward with it, except for Sanders, and he is never, ever, ever going to be president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who runs against him. I could run against it. It wouldn't matter. So I think that's the political price. The political price is, can he withstand this? Can this investigation by DOJ be fast enough to be able to set aside everything? And then they sit there and say, sure, Mr. Jordan, now that the investigation's over, we're more than happy to come in and share everything we learned. And when when Jordan finds out there's nothing there that hasn't been disclosed, what's he going to do? Say, I'm going to do an investigation anyway because I know there's more when there isn't? I don't know. But that's the political
third base.
Part. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
You got anything to add to that?
No. We've gone a few minutes into Hezzy's airtime here, so.
You never get.
Good
I think
discussion.
We have to start putting on that we're on from 10 to 11 whenever. What do you think, Kezzy? Can we put it on? We're on from 10 to 11 whenever. Does that work?
Has he
departed from us?
Yeah.
I haven't heard him either. Probably going out.
There he is.
Okay. No, I'm here. I'm listening.
Can we change our time from? Okay, so we can change our time to, you know, the Constitution. We talk about the Constitution, but the Supreme Court is doing like absolutely nothing right now.
Right.
We're all holding our breath for things. They haven't done a thing. Right or wrong, it doesn't matter. They haven't done anything. Have they? I haven't seen anything. Have you seen anything?
No. When it's in the news, we'll cover it.
Yeah, all right. So we're going to change it to the Constitution today, starting at 10 o'clock every Tuesday morning, going to whenever.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. All right. You've got meetings, right?
I think you don't have to worry about being fired. You know, there's so much going on.
Thank you.
It's all going to come forward.
You know, I wish that were true, but thank you very much for that anyway.
at least not from this.
There you go.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Okay. All right, Hezzy, we're leaving.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I can't believe it. We've gotten this far. My God, it's already 11 o'clock, after 11.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, what a pleasure, as always.
All right, thanks, Hezzy.
Have a great
week,
Hezzy. Take care of yourself, buddy, okay?
Thank you. Bye.
Yep.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, it's exciting to hear these guys. They're the best, really the best. That's unbelievable. All right, well, we're going to move on to different topics at the moment, and we'll cover, you know, just some other things to see what's going on. Seems that Santos will be removed from the United States Congress if he broke campaign finance laws. That's what a committee chairman says. The Reuters reports that U.S. Representative George Santos, who lied about much of his resume and life story, will be removed from Congress if found to have broken campaign finance laws. Fellow Republican and House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer said on Sunday. He's a bad guy, Comer said on CNN's State of the Union program. It's not up to me or any other member of Congress to determine whether he can be kicked out for lying. Now, if he broke campaign finance laws, then he will be removed from Congress. Santos has repeatedly refused to resign, even as pressure has grown within his own party for him to do so. On Thursday, he said he would vacate his New York City area seat only if he loses the next election. It seems that more than a dozen Republican officials, many of them from Santos's district, which covers parts of Queens and Long Island, have demanded the resignation of the newly elected congressman. At least six of his fellow Republican representatives from New York have joined the calls for him to step down. So House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has said he will leave Santos's fate to the Ethics Committee and voters. Democratic Representative Dan Goldman said he wrote on Sunday to McCarthy Representative Elise Stefanik, the Republican conference chairwoman, and Dan Constan, the head of the Congressional Leadership Fund, a House Republican fundraising group, about a New York Times report. They were aware of Santos's fabrication before the November election. He urged them to cooperate with any ethics investigation into the matter. It is one thing for a candidate such as Mr. Santos to induce voters to support him based on a web of lies, Goldman wrote in his letter. But it is altogether something else if the top levels of Republican leadership knew about Mr. Santos's lies during the campaign and chose to be complicit. McCarthy, Stefanik's office, and the Congressional Leadership Fund did not immediately reply to requests for a comment. So we'll have to see where all of this goes. Unbelievable. Literally unbelievable. Let's look and see what else is going on. Bear with me a second here. All right, let's just look here at some other things. Bear with me a second. This we'll find interesting. The Dutch police have arrested an alleged Islamic State security chief for war crimes. Seems that police in the Netherlands have arrested a man who allegedly played a key role in both Jabhat al-Nusra and the so-called Islamic State militant groups. The Dutch public prosecutor's office on Tuesday said that police had arrested a 37-year-old man suspected of links to war crimes. The office said the individual was said to have played an important role with two terrorist organizations, Jabhat al-Nusra and the so-called Islamic State, in the Syrian civil war. So the question is, what do we know? Police made the arrest in the southwestern village of Al-Kel, where the suspect, who is Syrian, was living after he was granted asylum, a prosecution service statement it said. It is suspected that between 2015 and 2018, the man held a managerial position in the security service of Islamic State, it said. From his position at Islamic State, he also contributed to the war crimes that the organization committed in Syria, the statement explained. And before that, he's believed to have been the head of security for 2 years for the Al-Nusra Front, the organization by many Western countries. At the same time, the man is said to have been active in and around the Yarmouk, a refugee camp, south of the Syrian capital of Damascus. An official did not name the suspect, who is set to appear in a magistrate's court in The Hague on Friday. So we'll find out about that then. He applied for asylum in 2019 and moved to Arkel a year later. Investigators began looking at what case the man had to answer, quote, after information was received about his past. Police in the Netherlands have made numerous arrests linked to Syria in recent years, including foreign nationals who had sought asylum there, and Dutch nationals who went to Syria to fight. Sinter began it with a crackdown on anti-government protests in 2011. The war in Syria is estimated to have killed nearly 500,000 people with and displaced millions more. Literally very frightening stuff. One second. And this is fascinating as well. Iran evidently has arrested a German for photographing an oil facility, so says the report. Iranian media have reported that a German national was arrested for allegedly taking pictures of sensitive, quote-unquote, oil facilities in southern Khuzestan, a province, a hub of Iran's oil industry. A German national was arrested in Iran on Tuesday for allegedly taking photos of oil facilities in the southwestern Khuzestan province, several Iranian media outlets reported on Tuesday. Well, the state-affiliated Jam newspaper reported that the yet unidentified German national took photos of, quote, sensitive oil centers, end quote, at the Ahazari oil field. The Tasnim news agency and the Student News Network, both close to Iran's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard, also reported the person had been taking photos of the oil facility without providing any further details. Germany's DPA news agency reported that the German Foreign Ministry is aware of the report and its embassy in Tehran is working to clarify the situation. Well, the arrest reports come a day after Germany summoned the Iranian ambassador to protest Tehran's handling of demonstrations. Iran security is on alert amid protests. It seems that Iran's security service have been on high alert amid months of political turmoil following the death of a young woman, 22-year-old Mahsa Amini, at the hands of the country's morality police, quote-unquote, in September. The protests since have morphed into a larger anti-government uprising opposing Iran's clerical leadership, with women playing a leading role. Germany has repeatedly lodged protests against the Iranian authorities' brutal crackdown against demonstrators, with Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock saying that the execution of the protesters will have consequences. Tehran has blamed the unrest on the United States and other Western countries without providing evidence. So we'll just have to see what goes on. One second. This is going to be really quite interesting. This is an opinion piece with regard to the new defense minister's chance with arms for Ukraine. It's written, it's a commentary by Roman Goncharenko. Germany has been struggling with the issue of arms shipments to Ukraine. In some cases, allies even doubted Berlin's support, saying yes, quote unquote, to Leopard 2 tank shipments could dispel doubt, so advises Deutsche Welle's Roman Goncharenko. Well, it's like deja vu. Ukraine and its partners in the West grow increasingly nervous as they watch Russian troops buildups, for instance, in Belarus, and wonder where and when President Vladimir Putin might strike next. Almost a year after invading his neighbor, the ploy remains part of Putin's tactics of attrition. Among Kyiv's allies, Germany is under increasing pressure to supply more weapons and is hesitant while the United Kingdom forges ahead, becoming the first NATO member planning to send modern battle tanks. Criticism of Berlin is on the rise, and Germany bashing is once again the order of the day in the Twitter bubble. The old rift between Eastern Europe and Germany threatens to crack wide open again, reminiscent of the situation in the winter of 2022 when Estonia wanted to ship stockpiled East German D-30 howitzers to Ukraine, and Berlin objected, only consenting to the move after the Russian invasion. Well, there are issues about dispelling doubts about German reliability. This time it's all about what most probably is the best known and most sought after product of the German arms industry at present, the Leopard 2 battle tank. It has become a symbol, and Kiev has been asking Berlin for these tanks for months and so far been told no, although less and less convincingly as time goes on. Recently, German Vice Chancellor Robert Habeck said that Berlin should not stand in the way if other countries want to deliver. Poland and several other NATO countries are ready to give Ukraine their own Leopard 2 tanks, but they need approval from Germany, where they were developed. At the start of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Berlin was criticized for its hesitant approach, and rightly so. And that reluctance, as well as the construction of the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline, represented Germany's two biggest mistakes prior to the invasion. Since then, the country has made impressive adjustments. Germany ended its dependence on Russian energy supplies at record speed, and arms deliveries to Ukraine are on the rise. Just a few weeks ago, Berlin announced plans to deliver Marder infantry fighting vehicles and a Patriot air defense system to Ukraine. And these are not mere trifles, and Kiev could really show a bit more gratitude, but sending Leopard 2 tanks is a chance for Berlin to dispel any lingering doubts concerning German reliability, a chance for a final correction of previous mistakes, and an opportunity to close this chapter. Well, Berlin must consent, and it will. Pressure is mounting, and there are indications pointing in that direction. Though it is only a matter of time, it would seem impossible to further delay without harming the country's image. And after Britain's announcement, it would no longer be a solo effort, which the Chancellor rejects because of German popular sentiment. Germany is ready to, quote, assume responsibility as one of the main guarantors of security in Europe, Olaf Scholz had written in a keynote article for Foreign Affairs magazine back in December, pledging to train and equip Ukrainian forces. Well, agreeing to provide the Leopard 2 tank would really be a step in that direction, and the sooner the better. The next opportunity is at the defense minister's meeting on Ukraine assistance at the U.S. base in Ramstein at the end of this week. It is a unique chance for Boris Pistorius, Germany's new defense minister, to make an historic announcement and give the green light to tank deliveries. Ukraine and its partners do not have much time. An even more brutal and bloody phase of the war is imminent, and Germany can no longer afford to hold back. Oh, it's frightening, the sort of stuff that goes on in the world stage. This is something that I had not expected, but I was also not aware of, and that is with regard to perspective of Egyptian activists who claim that we need to talk about abortion. Well, it seems that abortions are illegal in Egypt unless they are necessary to save a married woman's life. But that doesn't stop local women from having one. Egyptian society needs to acknowledge this, activist had said. Well, the memory of that day is still very painful for Noura. She was in Cairo's City Stars Mall when she suddenly felt cramps, accompanied by heavy bleeding. Quote, I sat down on the toilet. I felt something heavy flowing from my uterus. I put my hand under me to catch the blood. Noura is not using her real name here. She had an unplanned pregnancy at the age of 23 while in an extramarital relationship with a man called Khaled. After they realized she was pregnant, her boyfriend obtained abortion pills through friends. "It was too early for me to get married and become a mother," Nora had remembered. "Since abortions are forbidden in Egypt and punishable by law, she could only talk about it with her boyfriend and her roommate. She witnessed the abortion of her embryo sitting on the shopping mall's toilet. Quote, "It was an incredibly brutal moment," she says, "one she will never forget." Experience like that had by Nuri are what prompted a feminist activist by the name Khadir Ahmed El-Damati to write them down. In her book, Abortion Tales, Women Between Family, Love, and Medicine, which was published in Arabic in late of December 2022, she explains the circumstances in Egypt, describes the legal and medical situation, and also lets numerous women like Nora speak openly. "I want other women who have gone through an abortion or are still facing one to know that they are not alone," she says. Motherhood is emphasized in our society. Yes, the topic of abortion is completely avoided. It is forbidden. End quote. And El-Damati, who is now 32, demonstrated against the former regime in Cairo's Tahrir Square back in 2011. Women's rights were especially important to her, and over the years, her interest on the issue of abortion grew. Well, Egypt's restrictive abortion laws, the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights, and the Alliance for Realizing Sexual and Reproductive Justice describe Egypt as being one of the most restrictive countries in the world when it comes to abortion. Egyptian law does not allow abortion, nor does it allow survivors of rape or incest to terminate an unwanted pregnancy. Only danger to the life of the expectant mother or fetus is a legal justification for terminating the pregnancy, and even this is only if the woman is married. Well, Article 260 to 264 of the Penal Code stipulate penalties for women, doctors, midwives, and pharmacists who perform or assist in illegal abortions or who sell abortion-inducing drugs. In Egypt, abortions were first criminalized in 1883 during the era of Mohammed Tawfiq Pasha, following the French Criminal Code of that time. Well, these laws reflect the attitude towards women's bodies. Women have no say about whether they want to get pregnant or not, or whether they want to have an abortion, Aza Soliman advised. She's a lawyer, a feminist, and chair of the Board of Trustees of the Center for Egyptian Women's Legal Assistance, CEWLA. Soliman has been fighting for women's rights for years and was arrested for this in 2016. However, the fact that abortions are banned in Egypt does not prevent women from having one, whether they are married or not. Research by the World Health Organization has shown that abortion bans or restrictions do not reduce the number of procedures. Rather, they lead to more women undergoing dubious or dangerous procedures that can endanger their lives. Quote, "If something happens to a woman or there are medical errors, you can't take action against a doctor," El-Damati says. "There's also no follow-up care," she adds. "Women are left alone with their pain and the possible consequences. In addition, quote, abortion is only possible if you have the financial means. They are often very expensive." According to the World Health Organization figures, about 39,000 women worldwide die each year as a result of unprofessional abortions. About 60% of these happen on the African continent and 30% on the Asian continent. Reliable statistics on unsafe abortions in Egypt are not available. Unreliable statistics on unsafe abortion in nations where access to safe abortion is limited or non-existent prevents adequate research on the effects of abortion laws on women's health in the Middle East and North Africa areas. Washington-based gender studies expert Habiba Abdelal advised. Egypt is no exception to this rule. In the Middle Eastern and North African countries, abortions are permitted only if the life of the pregnant woman is in danger. Some countries, including Bahrain, Iraq, Jordan, Kuwait, Libya, Morocco, and Oman, for example, also allow abortions if there is a risk to the physical health of the pregnant woman. In 1990, September 28 was proclaimed Safe Abortion Day. It is the International Day of Action for the Right to Safe and Legal Access to Abortions. El-Damati says that in the 1990s, the issue of sexual health and also abortion was taken up by several organizations in Egypt, but that has changed now, she says. Abdelal agrees. Abortion is rarely at the top of local women's movements' agendas, she said. This is probably due to a fear of retribution from conservative social groups that often attempt to regulate and constrain women and girls to fit stereotyped gender roles in society. There are also frequent attempts to justify abortion bans on religious grounds, she said. CEWLA's Soliman hopes that in the future the issue of abortion will be discussed more and in a wider context. Quote, on a legal level, it is clear that the law needs to be changed, she said. Continuing, she says that abortion should not be banned, but we also need to talk more about women's sexual and reproductive rights as a medical or on the medical and social level and educate about the topic. After her traumatic abortion, Noura had to pretend that everything was fine. The fear of social stigma, possible punishment was too great. Short time later, Khaled and she broke up. Unbelievable. Well, it's truly amazing. One would think that women would rise through every country around the world because they're not being treated fairly. And I don't know what can be done about that. The men are not pushing it forward, so I think it's up to women to take a stand somehow. And it needs to happen in every country. And I think that when women rise, men will fall. Not in a negative way. They need to be taken down quite a few notches in order for women to get their rights. And it's more than time. And interestingly enough, of all places when one can think of, I don't think abortions are permitted in Iran, but the fact that a woman has stood up to the Ayatollah and was supported because of their intolerance of her just shows that you can cause an uproar and a change, and the women are driving the equation in Iran, and the men who support women are there to support women in the process. And I think at the end of the day, men will support women when they realize that women are rising to and responding to all these atrocities that belittle and diminish them as fellow human beings. And that's something that we need to recognize once and for all and act upon it in a manner that is conducive to appreciating life. And that's very, very pertinent. I can't imagine how else to better explain it. So bear with me a second as we go on to some other issues. Bear with me a second here. One second. One moment here. Okay. All right. I think we have to move on. I must have lost my place here. But this is really quite important. Zelensky evidently has accused Russians of cowardly silence over the Dnipro attacks. The President Volodymyr Zelensky on Sunday condemned Russian people's cowardly silence following the missile strike on a tower block in the city of Dnipro that has killed at least 30 people. As rescue efforts continue, the mayor of Dnipro has said the chances of recovering more survivors from the rubble is now minimal, and that becomes a major problem. One moment here. All right, need to move back. This is really important as well. A far-right group of militants are going on trial for a plot to assassinate President Macron. Seems that a dozen people with links to a French far-right group go on trial today, accused of plotting to assassinate President Emmanuel Macron and commit a string of other attacks. Prosecutors say that the 13 members of the group, they call themselves Les Bourgeois, conspired to engineer a putsch, which involved a plan for an attack on Macron during a public appearance back in 2018. Citing evidence collected online from telephone conversations and meetings, they say the suspects also plan to kill migrants and attack mosques. None of the plots allegedly prepared by the 11 men and 2 women aged between 26 and 66 ever came to anything, which caused prosecutors to downgrade some of the initial charges over the course of their 4-year investigation. Well, the main remaining accusation is a charge of conspiring to commit a terrorist act, which carries a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison. In 2018, France's domestic intelligence service received a tip-off saying that a far-right militant based in the French Alps region, a gentleman by the name of Jean-Pierre Bouillet, was planning to attack Macron during a World War I peace treaty centenary commemoration in November of that year. French anti-terror prosecutors began investigating on October 31 against the backdrop of boiling social anger in France over rising fuel prices, which was later to result in the creation of the Yellow Vest protest movement. On November 6, police arrested Bouillet, 62 at that time, and 3 others suspected of far-right links in the eastern French Moselle region. While searching Bouillet's car, they found a commando-style fighting knife and an army vest. In his home, they discovered firearms and ammunition. Police then went on to arrest other members of the Bourgeois movement, an extreme right, nationalist, and anti-immigration group formed on Facebook in 2017 and holding secret meetings. Its presumed leader, Denise Collinette was arrested in 2020. One meeting held in the Moselle region marked the beginning of the conspiracy, with members making plans to blow up mosques and kill Macron, as well as kidnap members of parliament and overthrow the government. During some meetings, group members conducted target practice and trained in first aid techniques. In posts on Facebook, Bouillet called on his followers to, quote, eliminate those who want to harm you, end quote, and called Macron, quote, a little hysterical dictator, end quote. During his detention, Bouillet told police that he had wanted to, quote, kill Macron, end quote, and hinted that one of his co-accused had hoped to approach the president during a meet and greet in a crowd and stab him with a ceramic-bladed knife, but later said the remarks had been just talk. Quote, he admits that there were such discussions, but they never went any further, end quote, lawyer Olivier Ronan had advised. The prosecution, she said, had failed to place her client's hostile remarks towards Macron, quote, in the context of the time, end quote. But investigating magistrates filing their findings to the court said that it was, quote, an established fact, end quote, that the group's plans were, quote, entirely aimed at seriously disrupting the public order by intimidation and terror, end quote. The accused held, quote, dissenting views on government, end quote, and made comments on what were, quote, sometimes extreme, end quote, one defense lawyer, Gabriel Dumenil, had acknowledged. Quote, but does that mean that they meant to take action and make an attempt on the life of the head of state? Question mark. And the answer is no, he said. Well, the trial is going to be set to close on February 3rd, so we'll follow through and see what happens at that point. Unbelievable, the sort of stuff that goes on in this world, isn't it? Unbelievable. This is really fascinating. A former commander of Russia's mercenary group, the Wagner Group, is seeking asylum in Norway. A former commander of Russia's Wagner mercenary group, who fought in Ukraine, said he has fled to Norway and is seeking asylum in fear of his life, for his life, after witnessing the killing and mistreatment of Russian prisoners brought into front lines. Andrei Medvedev, who joined Wagner Group on July 6 of 2022 on a four-month contract, said in a video posted by the Gulagu.net rights group that he had crossed the northern Arctic border into Norway before being detained by Norwegian police. Medvedev, an orphan who joined the Russian army and served time in prison before moving on to Wagner, that he had slipped away from the group after witnessing the killing of captured deserters from the Wagner group. Quote, I am afraid of dying in agony, end quote, Medvedev told Vladimir Ozechkin, founder of the Gulagu.net rights group, which said it had helped Medvedev leave Russia after he approached the group in fear for his life. He said he crossed the snowy border, climbing through barbed wire fences and evading a border patrol with dogs and herd guards firing shots as he ran through a forest and over thin and breaking ice into Norway. Local Norwegian police said a foreign citizen had been arrested on the night of Thursday to Friday after illegally crossing the Russian-Norwegian frontier north of the Arctic Circle and was seeking asylum. His Norwegian lawyer said that Medvedev was now in the Oslo area, quote unquote, but did not give details. Quote, what is important for him, meaning Medvedev, is that immigration authorities clarify his status as soon as possible, lawyer Brynjulf Risnes told Reuters. Well, Kripos, the Norwegian National Criminal Police Service, which has responsibility for investigating war crimes, said on Tuesday it wanted to question Medvedev. Quote, he has himself explained that he was part of the Wagner group, and it is interesting for Kripos to have information about this period, Kripos said in a statement. Medvedev has a status as a witness. Rizna said that Medvedev had not yet spoken with the Norwegian Security Police, the PST, and no agreement for an interview had been reached. Quote, I am sure that will be a question at some point, said Rizna, who declined to say where Medvedev fought in Ukraine. Quote, he says he has taken part in battle, which he says were clear battle situations, and that he has not been in contact with civilians, said Riznes. The Wagner Group founder, Yevgeny Prigozhin, a close ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin, said that Medvedev had worked in a Norwegian unit of Wagner and had mistreated prisoners. End quote. Quote, be careful, he's very dangerous, end quote, Prigozhin said in a statement released by his spokeswoman. He did not address the claims of killings or mistreatment of prisoners in the statement. In interviews with Gulagu, Medvedev said he grew disaffected after his contract was repeatedly extended by Wagner without his consent. He said he had witnessed the killing and mistreatment of Russian prisoners who were brought to the front by Wagner. Medvedev said that losses were very high after Wagner began sending large numbers of prisoners to the Ukrainian front in the second half of 2022, and Wagner's internal security service handed out extreme punishment, Medvedev had said. He said that a man who was shown in November being executed with a sledgehammer had been part of his unit. The Wagner statement did not address Medvedev's accounts of punishment and of battlefield losses, or that his contract was repeatedly extended. Prigozhin has said that Wagner is an effective fighting force because it had extensive battlefield experience, as well as well supplied, as a meritocratic commanding system in which all can contribute, and, quote, the most severe discipline, end quote. Russia sent tens of thousands of armed forces into Ukraine on February 24, in what it calls a special military operation, end quote, to, quote, denazify, end quote, its neighbor and protect Russian security. Unbelievable. Tell you the amount of falsehood that's being perpetrated on people is absolutely mind-boggling. 1 second. All right, let me just quickly look here for a moment. All right. Oh, 1 second here. One moment here. Well, let's look at what's going on in Germany, because Germany is such an important part of the European perspective. The inflation rate in Germany in 2022 is at a post-war record of 7.9%. Inflation in Germany stood at an aggregate of 7.9% for 2022, official figures show. And that's the highest it's ever been in Germany's post-war history. Food and fuel prices in particular drove consumer prices skyward. The German consumers faced the fastest rise in prices, particularly for food and fuel. In the history of the post-war German Republic in 2022, official figures released on Tuesday showed, well, the historically high annual inflation rate was driven above all by the extreme price increases for energy products and groceries since the start of the war in Ukraine, Ruth Brandt, the president of Germany's Federal Statistical Office, more commonly known as the Stasi, had said. However, the rate of inflation dipped markedly in December to 8.6% after three consecutive months of at 10% or higher. October was the year's peak at 10.4% rise compared to the same month in 2021. So although inflation had been creeping up even before Russia's invasion of Ukraine, with the 2021 rate in Germany at 3.1%, the war's effect on consumer prices was all too visible in the monthly figures. Stood at 4.9% in January and 5.1% in February, inflation jumped past 7% in March, the first full month after Russia's invasion on February 24, and remains at least that high for the remainder of the year. While the phenomenon of rapidly rising inflation was more or less global in 2022, by no means limited to Germany or Europe, although the European Union and Germany's prior dependence on Russian energy exports did put the region among the worst affected. Destatis's brand said that even though price increases, quote, were not passed on to consumers in their entirety, energy and food in particular did become more expensive for them, end quote. Politicians hope for inflationary pressures to ease in 2023, but they are also tempering that optimism. German Economy Minister Robert Habeck, speaking to Die Welt on the sidelines of the World Economic Forum in Davos, said he was hoping for the rate to have dipped to the 5% region by the end of 2023. He warned, however, that the year's overall figure would most likely be higher. Western central banks aim for an inflation rate in the region of 2% and have been steadily increasing interest rates after around 15 years of unprecedented lows in a bid to discourage some spending and borrowing. As well as rising food and energy prices, supply chain issues and commodity shortages, many of which can be traced to after effects of the COVID pandemic, also contributed to the pressures. Well, household energy expenditure rose in Germany by 39.1% compared to the previous year, more than four times overall inflation. Heating oil is up 87% and natural gas 64.8% climbed most sharply. Electricity prices overall rose 20.1%. For drivers, petroleum and diesel prices at the pumps rose by 26.8%. Groceries were next in line, albeit much closer to the aggregate levels, with food and drink shopping costing an average of 13.4% more compared to 2021. Eggs, cooking oils, and fats and dairy products rose by above average levels. Inflation tends to affect people on lower incomes most profoundly, particularly when products that everybody needs is roughly equal in equal amounts are rising. Well, the Stati said that several government measures had helped reduce pressures on consumers to some degree. There's about a, let me just think here, it's about a $15 local public transport flat fare was introduced as a one-off for 3 months in the summer, an effort to shoulder some of the rising energy costs at the government level in particular. So we'll have to see where all this goes. And a report from Davos, it seems that inflation is the main short-term global risk. That's what we expect. So we'll have to see if that comes about and if they will cover that in Davos. So we'll just have to wait and see. And bear with me a moment here. Okay. And this is what happened in the UK. Evidently, the UK is going to include trans people in conversion therapy ban. While the United Kingdom on Tuesday promised to include transgender people in a draft legislation banning so-called conversion therapy, end quote, aimed at changing sexual orientation or identity. The move, welcomed by gay lawmakers and the LGBTQ groups, comes after the government has long stalled on passing such legislation and sought to exclude transgender people. Culture Minister Michel Dornelan said a draft bill on banning conversion therapy in England and Wales will be published soon without specifying a date. It, quote, will protect everyone, including those targeted on the basis of their sexuality or being transgender, end quote, she added. But she added the proviso that legislation should not prevent, quote, parents or clinicians, end quote, having, quote, legitimate conversations, end quote, about, quote, gender-related distress, end quote, among children or young adults. The pronouncement came as the United Kingdom government is using its powers to block a bill passed in the Scottish Parliament to make it easier for people to self-identify as transgender. Well, some commentators suggested the announcement was an attempt to deflect attention. Conversion therapy is an umbrella term for interventions to change a person's sexual orientation or gender identity based on a belief this is possible. And there have long been calls for to ban the practice, outlawed by the United Kingdom's main association of psychologists and psychiatrists in 2015 as, quote, unethical and potentially harmful, end quote. Activists welcomed the government's announcement while saying it was long overdue. Quote, we have faced almost 5 years of delays and broken promises. The UK government must publish the bill and an imminent timetable as soon as possible, commented Stonewall, a pressure group. A bill presented by the United Kingdom government in 2021 proposed a jail term of up to 5 years for those who carry out conversion therapies on minors but did not penalize adults deemed to have freely consented. In March of last year, the government said it had dropped plans for a ban before swiftly reversing course and promising to implement a version of the draft law. In May, the government said it would bring forward a ban, responding to an online petition specifically about inclusion of transgender people. But it said there were, quote, different considerations when it comes to transgender conversion therapy, end quote. One of the complexities is that those who experience gender dysphoria may seek talking therapy. It is vital that legitimate support is not inadvertently impacted, the government said. Conversion therapy has been widely discredited and outlawed by a number of countries. So we'll just have to see where all this goes. And this is really quite interesting with regard to a French city is asking that the Madonna to loan back the artwork lost in the war. The mayor of the northern city of Amiens has launched an appeal to international superstar Madonna, asking her to loan the city a painting which she owns and that experts believe may be the same as one that disappeared from Amiens in 1918 at the end of the First World War. So we'll have to see where all that goes. So eventually we'll find out what's going on with that. Okay. One moment here. Where are we? Bear with me. Sorry about that for my sneezing. One second here. What is this? Okay. Well, experts are warning that the U.S. Navy with regard to China, and they're advising that a bigger fleet almost always wins. And it's an analysis. So we hear that as China continues to grow what is already the world's largest navy, a professor at the U.S. Naval War College has a warning for American military planners, and he says, in naval warfare, the bigger fleet almost always wins. Writing in the January issue of the U.S. Naval Institute's Proceedings magazine, Sam Tangredi, any lesson, China's numerical advantage is likely to lead to defeat for the U.S. Navy in any war with China. In seconds. Tancredi, the Leidos Chair of Future Warfare Studies at the U.S. Naval War College, and a former U.S. Navy captain, looked at 28 naval wars from the Greco-Persian Wars of 500 B.C. through recent Cold War proxy conflicts and interventions. He found in only three instances did superior technology defeat bigger numbers. All other wars were won by superior numbers or, when between equal forces, superior strategy or admiralship, Tangredi had said. Often all three qualities act together because operating a large fleet generally facilitates more extensive training and is often an indicator. 1 second. Okay. So I didn't realize we were approaching the end of our time slot. So we'll probably cover this a lot tomorrow. We've only got like about 2 minutes. It seems like in the Napoleonic War in the early 1800s, for example, French warships were superior in the technology of ship design and construction, but ultimately was the large number of Royal Navy ships that prevented Napoleon from crossing the English Channel. So that's what Tancredi wrote. So we'll try to see if we can remember to cover this again with you tomorrow. Anyway, so that's the story. We're going to wish you a good day and all the best. And that'll be the end of our day today with you. Goodbye.